The following podcast may contain mature themes and coarse language. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the No Fear Project Podcast. I'm your co-host, Pete, and out in Pennsylvania, back from Florida, right?
I'm back.
All right. We've got Nicole. How are you?
I'm good. Isn't that the socially acceptable answer? Right?
I think so. Well, I'm just excited that you decided to record a second time with me, so I didn't scare you off the first time, which is great.
No, I was actually really excited about it. I was very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, it was fun. And we've got to find little joys in today's world because, I don't know, like we're sitting here and I'm not even sure I have my mind straight just with everything kind of going on, the uncertainty, the doubt, the fear, you know, the FUD factor, fear, uncertainty, doubt, just all that unknown. And I don't know, I grabbed a glass of wine and, you know, decided to talk to you. That's pretty much what I've done so far today.
Well, I banished everyone to the upstairs and I walked downstairs and my daughter looked at me. I mentioned last time I have a little one who's 6 and then an older one who's 11. And she looked like a deer in headlights. She's like, "You're going in the basement?" And I said, "I am. And unless you're bleeding or you just throw up, no one needs to come downstairs and let me know." And she just panicked and I realized it's because she has this slime factory downstairs. I don't know if any of your kids went through a slime phase.
I have tried to avoid slime. There's two things I try to, or three things. Slime, glitter, and most of all, Play-Doh. I hate it.
Oh my God. It is like, and she knows I get psychotic and I try not to because I'm not nearly the mom I always thought I'd be. Like I thought I'd be really into all this shit, but I'm not. And I came downstairs and I went to put the laptop down and there is just Pete. Like, I don't know if you can see it. There's just shit everywhere. And I was like, oh God, I have to talk about, like, you know, joy and finding the beauty and the, you know, just trying to find the sacredness, the sweetness and all of the pain. And I'm just surrounded by like shit everywhere. Like the irony of this moment is not lost on me.
But yeah, isn't that part of it though? Is like it isn't part of like getting to the point of joy. It's not sticking your head in the sand, right? It's acknowledging that shit show is going on. It's not ignoring the shit show. It's like leaning into it, admitting it, embracing it, and then trying to make something out of it. At least that's the way that I'm trying to get through this crap. I mean, is that what you're doing?
It is. And for me, a big part of it is getting just very clear on what really matters, right? Because 5 days, 5 years, 5 decades from now, if I'm here, you know, I'm never going to look back, think, oh, remember all that glitter and slime everywhere. You know, I'm going, this is the stuff that the little old ladies in the grocery store who say to me, "Enjoy it, honey, it goes so fast." Right. This is the stuff that they tell me, they promise me that I'm going to miss. You know, and so it is these moments that that matter. But right now, like stuff on top of lots of unknowns, and it's mess on top of lots of more uncontrollable mess.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so funny too because we have a person that I interviewed and. She's in the sub 30 club called, her name is Susan Hurd, and Susan, and I talked for a couple of hours, you know, a couple of years ago, on the Fat Man Chronicles podcast. And so as much as like, I despise glitter because of her son, David, and the way that she, the way that David would put so much happiness into the world, even as he was unfortunately dying from cancer, like there's glitter always in Susan's world, right? And so that's the kind of of asked, like, I look at Glitter now differently after that interview than I did before, right? And I think that that kind of encompasses for me what I'm trying to do in 2020 as I confront these fears and this uncertainty. Like, I'm trying to find the little aspects and capture them and then try to twist them and redefine them, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm not always successful. I mean, I've had a really shitty week and ate my feelings as we've gone through this, you know, enormous amount of uncertainty with my older kids who don't live with me all the time, that they've been exposed and, you know, the test is pending and the numbers here in Illinois for coronavirus are, I mean, I know they're big across the country. In Illinois, they're out of control, really bad. And so that just causes all kinds of like, oh no, are they even going to be able to be here for Thanksgiving? And then how do we, we're definitely not going to have the family here because in like, there's just no way there's no way. Right. So how are we going to redefine that? I mean, now we're going from the unknown to a known that's not where we want life to be. How do we look at this? Like what's going on and with everybody and how do we take that and find the tools to handle it? Because unless you go through tragedy in life, which we hope is pretty rare, you don't exercise these skills, these muscles very often to get through this bullshit, right? So, I don't know. I just spewed a bunch out there and kind of wondering like where you're at in this kind of realm today.
Well, I'm in a limbo. Because we're in a district that's very much guided by the health department. And so we keep getting these letters from our superintendent that's sort of saying, we'll see where things are after Thanksgiving. And it's almost like, depending on how you interpret it, because I don't, is it Anais Nin who says, we don't see things as they are, we see things as we are? I think it's Anais Nin, or it might be Rumi, but one of them says again, we don't see things as they are, we see things as we are. So I've already have my heel stuck in the ground that she doesn't want the school to be open. I don't know if that's true. That's just my puss face interpretation of how I think she's governing the school district, right? And so for me, I read the email, and because I'm not seeing things as they are, I'm seeing things as I am, I'm thinking she's looking for any opportunity to close it down. So as far as I'm concerned, she's laying the groundwork to close the school after Thanksgiving. So I've got this whole limbo thing happening, which then obviously brings up, like, to me, the worst place, I think most of us can handle whatever the bad news is. It's the limbo that's the hardest space.
Yeah, you know? I'm with you on that. And school is exactly where that is happening for both of us, right? With younger kids, we just don't know from one day to the next. And I'm seeing a massive difference between my two kids that are in high school, how their remote education works and how they handle it and how my five-year-old handles it. I mean, it's, and even like kind of what the content is and the speed at which they go and what the expectations are.
Right.
And what's amazing, though, and I don't know if your little one's the same, but mine just roll, like the kid, she rolls with it. Like she'll just go to school for a couple days, come home. Now I'm back. Like she just does whatever. Like she just does what she's told. Right.
Right.
It's us adults who are like, oh, shit. Now, do I got to teach on Tuesdays? Do I got to watch over? Like, what am I doing? Like, can I work? Am I not working? It's that, I think what that limbo, right? Like that uncertainty, not knowing what's going to happen and living that in a constant state.
Mm-hmm.
That's what gets to us.
Yeah. And the management of all of the materials and just, it's just, there's a lot. And even just the energy of this conversation, right? Like it's frenetic. It's, and I feel like that is, has been my state of being since school started. You know, it's just this not knowing.
Right.
And so when I think of, but can we hop back to something that you said
absolutely,
earlier?
Please.
So when you said the, you know, not knowing if you're, is it, are your older ones, are they your boys? Are they?
I have a boy who's almost 17 in very, very short order. I just can't believe he's that close to it. And I've got my middle daughter is a freshman. So yeah, they're both in high school right now.
Okay. And so for people who haven't been through the possible exposure, what's that rainbow of emotions been like for you?
Yeah, I would find it hard to believe that not almost everybody has been close to somebody at this point who's gone through it. But for me, my kids getting it is scary for a couple of reasons. One, they are seeing some very rare outcomes with kids. Like they survive very, very well. Most of them don't even show symptoms, but they're starting to have studies, like especially with athletes, where they get coronavirus, they show no symptoms, they go to football practice, and all of a sudden they're in cardiac arrest or near it, right? Like they're having heart problems and lung problems. So I tend to be kind of, my therapist called it, I'm like a fatalist, right? Like I'm always looking for the worst in things. Like that's kind of my default. Like, oh my God, this could happen. So for me, it's trying to tone down that, because I know that 99% of the time, nothing happens, right, with kids. And then for me, it comes to, okay, now the mental aspect of it. And what if they exposed their mom, their grandma, their friends, you know, I get worried about their mental state if they end up exposing somebody who gets sick.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this kind of cascading set of what ifs. And frankly, it stopped me from sleeping, you know, at night, because my mind is racing. So I try to meditate, and, you know, you do the things that you try to, you know, whatever, like I'll read or trying to calm my mind. But you said this conversation's frenetic. It's kind of how I am all the time in my head. The 800 mm-hmm. voices just are constantly chattering, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
me too. Same.
You know, so it's like I look at this, and I guess in the end, and I can only speak for myself, not how others would handle this. For me, the problem is that I'm looking at, okay, there's this huge world of possibility with coronavirus, which is so much different than any other illness or disease I can think of, right?
Mm-hmm.
If this was, I don't know, like I hate to use the flu, right? Because I don't want to compare the two. But if it's the flu, like you kind of know what the flu is. You know how long it lasts. You know if you take these meds that it kind of makes it lesser. If you, even something super bad, like I hate to say this, but like if somebody came to me and said, oh, I have prostate cancer, at least you kind of know like, what the protocol is and kind of what advances it and what markers they're looking for on, hey, this is really bad.
Right.
For the first time in my life, there's something that you go, okay, I'm sick. I'm in the ICU. Like, and nobody knows like, okay, how do we fix it?
Right.
Or we can't fix it. Right. Like, so it's that uncertainty of the disease itself, of this virus itself. And then you start, well, you know, you start looking at too many factors, right? And the fact is we don't know.
Right. So there's that home of limbo again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, again, I think that whether it's the election, I know we don't talk politics, but the election, education, coronavirus, it just seems like there's just the sheer volume of unknown for people right now. It's just this medley of waves that won't seem to stop. You know, like when I work with clients, especially back when I used to work with kids, we would talk about how waves are like feelings and they come. And the coolest thing about waves is that they don't stay forever. They go back into the ocean and then, you know, the next one comes, and some are bigger and some are smaller. But this just seems like it's just like a tsunami, like it won't stop, you know, and they seem to be pretty damn hard waves, you know, that just knock people down over and over again. And if your wave is not that bad, it seems like your neighbor's wave is hard enough to impact you too, you know?
Absolutely. And I feel like 2020 has been, is like the year that fear has been waiting for. Like it's been, that monster has been licking its chops, like waiting for this. And it's, and fear's decided it's going to take up residence this year, and it's going to try to rule your existence.
Yeah.
You know, at this point.
It's interesting because what I would urge clients to do in this situation, and obviously you are not a client, nor is anyone listening, right? So we always have to give that caveat, right, that, exactly. You know, we're just two buddies having a conversation right now. But in this situation, this is where I always ask people when they start talking about what they've read, you know, have you read the actual Google Scholar research study, or did you read the article citing the study? Because there's a lot of articles that cite the study that leave out a lot of important data that makes the actual research not as scary, you know, especially the ones about the kids. I don't remember the name of the, but the one with the inflamed, where they're saying like children are getting the inflamed heart?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you read a lot of the research studies about that, it's not, there's some like really flawed research out there, and that's stated in the data, you know?
I think what's interesting there, not to stop your train of thought, but I think this is a really important point. Like, the reason we end up reading the article that was in Yahoo and not going to the study is because it's easier, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if you click, though, and you go to the study, most people don't speak the language of research paper, right? Which is so much different. Like, it honestly, for some people, it would be like, you know, dropping yourself in the middle of, you know, Hong Kong and trying to speak Chinese, right? Or whatever it is. That's probably, I think they speak a lot of English there, but you know what I mean? So it's literally like a foreign language. So we don't even speak, like, we're not even speaking the same language in that study. And I think, unfortunately, what happens is then an author, a writer, gets a hold of that study, skims it, takes the executive summary, and tries to interpret that into something else, right? And that's what we end up reading. So it's like we didn't understand the original language. Now we're reading the translated language, and it's not accurate either. And then we're going to have our interpretation on top of that.
Right. Right. And then hearsay from everyone else is like, well, did you read the article about such and such? This is what they said. And right. I put that in quotation marks, they, those, you know, experts on X, Y, and Z. And I would say that even, you know, with the grad courses that I have, I'm the first to admit, I don't understand the stuff in the middle. Like when you start to give me all of those math symbols and some letters, and then there's some other math symbols, I'm like, I don't know what any of this means. But I can pretty much get what I need to know from the intro and the conclusion, right? Because that's where they tell you, this is why we did this. And then in the conclusion, they say, this is why this study might be wrong.
Right. And they try to do those parts in as plain English as possible. And then right now, though, I think one of the interesting parts about coronavirus in general, right, is it's brand new, right? People, it's a, not even a year old, right? It's not even hit a birthday yet. And it's had this big of an impact, which means that the research is really, really fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's not complete data sets. The data sets will have changed between the beginning of the pandemic, where we had no mitigation factors, till now, where we are, at least we know. We didn't even know this existed, and we're trying to extrapolate data from that period to try to make conclusions, right? And on top of that, you're getting a bunch of studies that are not peer-reviewed yet.
Right.
So, and for anybody that doesn't understand that, but basically what peer reviewed is somebody else that's an expert in the field, usually several of them, need to review the data and the protocols and look at the modeling and make sure that the everything was set up properly and that the same conclusions can be drawn if you did this study again and again and again. So when it's not peer reviewed, you can pretty much say whatever you want. In other words, it's basically like Twitter. You know, you can just say whatever you want. Doesn't matter. Twitter right. may put up a little flag like, hey, you might want to double check this, but too late. Tweet's up there. Mm-hmm. People have made right. their conclusions and they're looking for an echo chamber. So, you know, that doesn't, yeah. That's why, I mean, like I read a lot of studies, like raw data studies, because I'm a data person. That's where I like to live. So I like to live in the math, but not in like the medical terms, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, we'd probably be dangerous reading one of these things together, you know, because of that. But it adds to the uncertainty when, you know, study one says, hey, fat's terrible for you. And study two says, oh, fat's the best thing in the world for you. You can lose a ton of weight. Like, it's just, it's like that kind of shit going on with yeah. a deadly disease. So.
Well, and it's amazing what you can do with numbers, right? I mean, you can make anything support whatever you want based on just the ability.
Come on, that famous saying, lies, damn lies, and statistics.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me how people can make things work to support their narrative, you know? So, but going back to keeping you up at night, because I have to believe that this is sort of the natural state of being right now. And you are, and I know just based on the, you know, the couple clients that I'm still seeing a week. I mean, I'm seeing clients right now who months ago were just, you know, relatively high functioning clients who just wanted their lives to be a little bit better. And I've had a few in the last couple of weeks who I've referred to IOP, which is intensive outpatient, where that's considered the next level of care from outpatient therapy, which is, you know, what most people do when you go to see a therapist once a week. So I know you're probably familiar with this, but for people who don't know, IOP would be where you would, intensive outpatient would be where you would go to some sort of program where you would attend therapy sessions for about 3-4 hours a day, about 4 days a week for 6 to 8 weeks. And so it's a much more intensive program, and it really requires people to focus on how they got to, you know, what got them into that dark of a space to, you know, and really everything else gets weeded out because you don't have time to do anything but focus on your mental health. So, and I've had two people who, you know, this is the direction that they're heading in because people are struggling. We talked about that last time.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do we do? Like, what are some of the tools? Like, what are you doing to keep yourself sane while you try to, you know, help other people?
Yeah, well, I also eat my feelings, right? But I did, when I'm not doing that, and well, it's so interesting because having taken that week away, it was amazing to me how organic it became to practice my tools again. You know, I was like, oh yeah, Nicole, this is what self-care feels like. You forgot to, because I feel like a lot of times I'm just sort of reacting, and having taken a week away, I felt grounded again. And from that space, then I'm able to make decisions that serve me and the people that I love really well, right? But I don't have the privilege of doing that. And I've been nonstop with kids since I got home. So what do I do while the shit show is happening? Cause that's the real reality of the situation. And a lot of it for me is, I'll say I can do X, Y, and Z, but I have to set a timer on my phone. That's really the only way that I get this stuff done. So I will set a timer on my phone at noon, and I set another one at 3. And during that time, I do this technique that's called the drop the anchor technique, where it's this idea of typically I have an emotional storm. Like the way you described they can't see us right now. I'm making these hand gestures, this like swirling, you know, around my head. But it feels like there's just thoughts that just don't stop swirling around my head all day long. And part of that is an ADHD thing.
Ooh, can we call that the thought tornado?
Yeah, the thought tornado, the emotional storm. And so twice a day, I have an alarm go off that requires me to stop and pause. And in that moment, all I do is I stop and I ask myself, you'll have to let me know if we did this last week. But I'll ask myself, I'll go, okay, Nicole, what day is it? It's Wednesday. Where are you? I'm in the basement. Name five things in front of you. And then I'll say wall, outlet, laptop, water bottle, phone. Typically that's all I do, but, you can do four things you hear, three things you see, taste, you know, you activate the five senses, but just something that helps to ground you. I'll push my feet into the ground and then I will breathe, right? And then I will ask myself, okay, can we just be for this moment in Wednesday? That's it. We just need to be in Wednesday. We need to be in the basement at 7:35 right now. That's it. That's all you have to do. And the other time that when I first started to do this technique, I always did it when I was brushing my teeth. Did we talk about this?
No, and I'm fascinated. Okay. So what's the outcome or the purpose, I guess, of that?
So everyone thinks that we should just be like organically joyful people, right? And that this stuff should come naturally. And it doesn't. We are actually hardwired for suffering. That is how the mind is. It's created that way to keep us safe, right? And so if we want to get good at pausing, coming back to the present moment and recognizing the things that we're grateful for, we have to practice it as much as we practice worrying and as much as we practice being anxious and as much as we practice creating the mind stories about all the what ifs and all the things that can go wrong, right? And we don't get there because we want to. We get there because we've practiced it, right? And so for me, when I started doing this, I did it when I was brushing my teeth. So I would say, what day is it? It's Monday. What am I doing? I'm brushing my teeth. Okay, can I just brush my teeth? And then I would try to just focus on brushing my teeth, and it would last all of like half a second, and I'd be like, oh shit, I don't want to do, but, and I'm like, oh my God, stop. You're just supposed to brush your teeth. You know, and then I try to like focus the feeling of brushing my teeth. And, you know, and then it would just, but for me, unless I set the timer, I don't do it. And I've been doing this for like 10 years. You think I'd get better at it naturally? Some people are better at it. I think it's my ADHD brain. I just don't.
You would think that the Pavlov's dog theory would kick in at some point, right? Like,
yeah.
You hear that alarm.
Or like the neural circuitry would like form these, you know, connections. Right. That's what a neurotypical brain. So those of you with neurotypical brains, it's not going to take you as long as it takes me. You guys will, you know, it'll be like 4th of July up there. Your circuitry will fire faster. But mine seems to be a little bit slower.
So is it 15 seconds? I mean, this is a mindfulness practice, right? I mean, it's just a different form of meditation that's a little bit more active and in a moment, right?
Yeah, because I'm not going to meditate right now as much as I wish that I would. It's just something that I'm just not going to do. But I will be mindful, because mindful doesn't require me to add anything to my life. I just have to do what I'm already doing with awareness, openness, and curiosity. So that's one of the things I do. I'll drop the anchor, come back to the present moment. I can, you know what? I don't know if I have it on this computer. Let me see if I have it on this computer. I used to have a handout that I would give to people. Let me write that down. But so that's one thing that I would do. So that mindfulness practice. Where were we going with this?
I'm just trying to figure out, like, how do we, like, what are some of the techniques? What's in the toolbox to kind of try to help us, like, ground ourselves? So this is a good one. So is this something that's like 15 seconds? Like it's that quick, like just those couple questions, or should you just take as long as you need? Like, how do you, I'm still confused on like how to start that. Right.
Yeah. So, all right. So why don't we do it? Would that be okay?
Sure.
So I would say to you, Pete, what day is it today?
Wednesday.
And where are you right now?
My basement.
And tell me five things that you see in the room.
Laptop, an Apple 2GS, a TV, a room divider, and a glass of wine.
Okay. What are one or two things that you hear?
You, mostly, because I have headphones on, but I do hear my little one's feet scampering above me.
Okay. And is there anything that you taste or smell?
Definitely wine. And that would be it right now.
Okay. And physically, what do you feel against your body? Not what are you feeling emotionally, but what do you physically feel touching your body or?
A chair, glasses, and headphones.
Okay. And, okay. And so I'm just going to have you push your hands together. And if you can just push your hands together and maybe push your feet into the floor. Take a deep breath. And in this moment, are you suffering?
No.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think that is?
I wasn't thinking about all the things I would normally be thinking about, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're just in Wednesday, right? It's just Wednesday.
Yeah.
So we just have to be in, 7:40 on Wednesday. That's it, right? And we can all be in 7:40 on Wednesday right now.
Right.
You know, and so when I'm, what I love about this technique is there's been times when I've been arguing with my husband and I don't have to leave the room. Like I can feel the tension starting to climb up my body and I can just sort of, for me, at this point, I just need to name things. So I'll just start naming things in front of me in my head. No one knows I'm doing it, you know, but it's just, it gets me from the story in my head. Like we're as a society, we are just such walking heads all the time. And so this, for me, like this technique, it's super simple and easy, but it helps me sort of shimmy back into my body. And then from there, I get to decide, you know, who I want to be, right? And so from here, okay, so it's late at night, you've got the Corona story going, right? You're worrying about your kids. You're already in Thanksgiving. It's not Thanksgiving for a couple of weeks. We don't have results back, so there's no evidence
right. That
you have to make decisions about anything, right?
Right?
But you do this technique, you shimmy back into your body. So now you're in a place of what we call, or at least what I call, a pause. So now you get to make a choice. Do I want to stay? And this, if you're taking notes, anyone, this would be something I would jot down. Do I want to stay stuck in this story? Which is fine. You can always stay stuck in your story. No one can ever take suffering away from you, right? Or do I want to behave in alignment with who I want to be? So do I want to stay stuck in my story of gloom and doom and suffering, or do I want to behave in alignment with who I want to be? And so when you think about, you know, who you want to be, you know, in that moment, who do you want to be? Do you want to be someone who's patient, who's curious, who's, what comes to mind?
Yeah, I mean, all of those things. I definitely want to be much more patient. I mean, my word for the year in 2020 is curious. Like that's what I've been working on.
So in general. So what would be the behavior of someone who was curious in that moment?
You know, I think it's so anathema to my natural state that it becomes very interesting to try to even emulate that. I mean, I could tell you that maybe it's better for me to just think about what I would rather do in that moment.
Okay.
I would rather say to myself, how can I help my kids get through this time of uncertainty and look forward to the next time I get to be with them? Mm-hmm. So I wish I could, I don't want to ignore the middle where that uncertainty and the fear lies. I just don't want to have to address it all the time. And that's kind of where I'm at, right? As my mind, for whatever reason, feels almost like I feel like I've got to address it at all times. I've got to be on alert. I've got to be, you know, constantly thinking of every possible outcome, which in a way is curious, right? That's the bad side of curious. That's, you know, more manic curiosity where you've got to know and you get, you know, paralysis mm-hmm. by analysis, right?
Right. And,
you know, I've always said I don't want to be this way. Some things I don't have a choice on, right? Like I'm sure that some of this is to do with the fact that, you know, I have chronic depression, and I'm sure that some of that is a manifestation somewhere of that. But I don't want that to be the excuse or the crutch anymore, right? Like I want to find a way to separate that part of me from
right.
this part, right? So I know it's a long-winded answer because the answer is like, I don't know. If I knew, I'd probably do it or at least do it more often.
Well, so I think when you're looking at the behavior of someone who's curious, right? So I think what you did there was, you know, how can I help my kids in this situation? I think that is what someone who's curious is going to examine all the angles, right? But I think someone who's curious is also going to say, okay, well, what else might happen, right? And that's a question that no one seems to ask themselves pretty consistently. They tend to just the mind, but again, we're hardwired for it. So the mind is only going to focus on the doom and gloom scenario. It's not going to say, well, what else might happen? It might be fine, right?
I guess that's the problem. I am thinking of that simultaneously. It's just not the thought that dominates.
Right. And we're not hardwired to really accept that thought because the mind doesn't have anything to solve with that thought. So if the mind is a problem-solving machine, it can't do anything with it. So it's like it almost discards that sort of thinking, which is why I'm not a huge fan of, and the therapy I work with isn't a big fan of what we call control strategies, where you try to like cheer yourself up or avoid or spin it so that it sounds better. There's much more freedom in acceptance and commitment therapy when you're able to just notice the thought and sort of like allow it to float on by. So curiosity here would be just going, oh, isn't that interesting? I'm trying to sleep and here's my story, my Thanksgiving, my Corona story again. My kids have Corona, or I don't know, what would you name it if it was a chapter in the book? The Book of Pete.
waiting on results right now. I mean, that's that kind of in-between factor. And I think what is interesting that you brought up that, you know, gets me thinking again, and I'm going to sound like a broken record, right? Railing against social media. But I think that we are living in an echo chamber of negativity between social media, cable news. We just, it's constant conspiracy theories from whatever bent that you have, and nothing's ever true, right? So you don't know what to believe. It causes more fear. It's just like this vicious cycle, right? So when you take somebody like me, whose natural inclination is a little bit doom and gloom, right? And then you give them an echo chamber that's what's getting just pushed at them constantly. I've gotten way worse since social media has come, you know, been a big factor in news making, right? In the last 6 or 7, 8 years, I've just gotten progressively worse. to the point where now I don't look at it much. I mean, I really don't. I'm looking at it less and less. And quite honestly, if I didn't have podcasts, I would just delete it.
Mm-hmm.
100%. I would delete it. And I'm getting close to just saying, okay, I'm going to delete Twitter and Instagram, and I'll just have the group, and I'll only have alerts for the groups.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it, you know, and just turn off all other alerts. Don't even look at them and go from there. And I say that, but the only one other factor is Facebook is in particular really good with those memories, right? Those pictures that you took 11 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. That's...
Besides looking and saying, oh shit, I had hair then.
Right.
It's real. That part is really like, that's the nice part, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the article after article that everybody's got to, you know, try to prove their point or announce that they're going to, you know, some other app that's going to give them what they want, right? Which is just going to, again, they're just trying to find their echo chamber. I'm going to use that over and over.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of feel like I get through that. And at night, I let that bother me more.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when you're alone. That you get alone with your thoughts, right? That's when it bothers me a lot more. During the day, I'm too busy.
Yeah. But I think that's so common. I think the nighttime, especially during this time, I mean, it is just, it's like for so many people, it's that cycle of, and it's a lot of eating. Like a lot of clients are talking about it's serotonin seeking behavior, right? And then the serotonin makes the melatonin. And so there's a lot of, you know, a lot of anxious people who just aren't sleeping right now. And a lot of it, you know, just a lot of, I think in general, inflammation it's just a mess.
Yeah.
But I think so much of it is built around this idea. And listen, I was pitching a fit this morning. So again, I just want to shatter. I hope I have shattered any illusions. It's so funny because there, when I sort of get into this space, it's like this reminder of what my truths are. And I'm like, Nicole, can we fucking, excuse my language, try to like live this every once in a while? Because I say it and it feels like home, right?
Yeah.
But what you just said is so, so exactly it of this reality that nothing is all one thing, right? And so, you know, people going to the different, you know, the new apps or the old apps, but now people are like making them their new homes. And they're
going to MySpace, just so we're clear.
Yeah. Oh my God. I still think I have The Cure playing on MySpace. So we should all head back to MySpace because they had music and that was awesome. But just this idea that nothing is all one thing. Like if for the most part, you know, barring any sort of, you know, awful tragedy, but even when there is tragedy, people can still find wisdom and sweetness in the pain. You know, you look at people who have had terrible, awful losses. Viktor Frankl, who wrote the, you know, Man's Search for Meaning. I mean, that was a shitty life, a shitty period of life that he had endured, and he still managed to find meaning.
Yeah, I'll put that in the show notes. Like, we don't have affiliates or anything. I refuse to do any of that stuff, but mm-hmm. I'll still link that. It's one of my, you know, favorite books of all time. It's in probably my favorite nonfiction book of all time is Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. While he, you know, was in a concentration camp in Nazi Germany, and it's amazing. And if you don't come out of that feeling hope for humanity and yourself, then I think you've definitely not fully captured what Viktor Frankl was talking about. That's a really good example. And I think that's a really, what these tools, right? We're not equipped. And I think Viktor Frankl was actually kind of saying that in his book, right? We don't have these tools. He had them kind of naturally. Mm-hmm. And it's not like he was a Pollyanna. That's not it at all, right? He wasn't just, oh yeah, life is great inside this, you know, concentration camp. But he would just look for small things and then center his mind in his ways to get through. Mm-hmm. And that, maybe I need to reread that right now. But the part that I like, though, is, you know, you give a concrete tool, one concrete tool, right, of a mindful practice that we can try to go to in these times of uncertainty, because mm-hmm. they're not ending anytime soon. For me, that's been one of the big things. Like, I've shifted my mindset. So taking the kids and that kind of stuff aside, right? My mindset I've shifted to, hey, this is a long haul problem.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Even if there's a vaccine or whatever, and I don't, you know, like, this is, in my mind, I've got to think about this as 2 years or 3 years that we are going to have this kind of uncertainty around a virus we don't quite understand, right? Versus like this kind of false hope of it could end tomorrow, right? Like, I get it. Like, why we had that hope at the beginning, I get it. I'm not saying it was false hope then. That was true hope. But as we've gone on, to think that, like, come mid-January, because we have a vaccine starting to be distributed, that it all goes away,
mm-hmm.
is ridiculous. Like, we can, this isn't a therapy, you know, podcast, although it does seem like it was a therapy session for me today. But I'm happy to talk you off the ledge of false hope if you think that this is, like, done come February. Like, it's not. That's just, let's accept that. And the moment that I accepted that, I was way worse. Like, I wasn't sleeping at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now I can sleep. It's just, I've got, like, a little anxiety right now or whatever. But when I accepted that is when my mind, like, I was finally able to just kind of exhale and relax. You know, it's kind of like getting the diagnosis itself, probably, right? It's the uncertainty that bothers us. It's that limbo. That's where fear lives, in limbo. That's what it's feeding off of.
Right. Right. And I go back to, because I think it's an important, I actually think of all the things we talked about, it's probably the most important piece, because this idea that nothing is all one thing, because the mind will never, we talked about it before, just being organically sparkly. It's not, our minds are just not organically joyful. So it's never going to, on its own, pull out the wisdom or the, I don't want to say positive, because I don't know if it's like the Jersey in me, but I'm not, I know I should be, you know, as a clinician, I should probably be super pro positivity, but I'm much more pro gratitude than I am positivity. You know, I think, I think there's a lot of toxic positivity happening now, and I think it's as damaging in some ways as negativity, but that's a whole other conversation. But I think with fear, go ahead, what were you going
to
say?
No, I was going to say, I think we went through this with my exception to Brené Brown's quote last time. And yeah. It's very much like that, right?
Yeah, it's just, but with fear, it's like there's other emotions that are in the party. They just, it's like fear is the loudest of all of them, you know? And if we could just acknowledge that there's other things there, it just makes it less, it's hard to fear situations. Like, people, you know, I think we talked about this last time, that I tend to be relatively fearless. And I think part of that is because I know that nothing is all one thing, that it's all going to be some semblance of a shit show at the end anyway. So, that's kind of like fun for me, because there's nothing to really worry about, because it's always fine.
Right.
For the most part, I should say, for the most part. But I used to say to clients, like, it's a lesson, a blessing, or a really good story. Those are my outcomes to every situation I've ever had in my 43 years. A lesson, a blessing, or a really good story. So.
Well, I think that's good to end on, unless, you've got anything else that you had to share with us today?
No, I think that's a nice place to stop.
I feel like fear, though, the way you described it is like, what are those commercials? It's your cousin from Boston. I feel like it's the, like, fear is that loud, you know, that loud guy at the party, you know, that's always got to be the center of attention. No, that's pretty good. But no, I like it. So, I mean, I'm going to sum up a little bit of kind of what we talked about. We're living in a time that the unknown, being in limbo, is the norm. That's not going away. Like you have said, nothing is all one thing. So when you kind of accept that, you can start to change a perspective. It doesn't change the outcome necessarily, but it changes the way that you handle it, the way you look at it. And then in our toolkit, you gave us the drop the anchor technique and then asked two defining questions. Do I want to stay stuck in the story, or do I want to behave as I want to be? I think I paraphrased that a little bit.
Do I want to behave in alignment with who I want to be?
In alignment. In alignment.
We can talk a little bit more about that one moving forward, because it's a little meatier than...
Yeah, that's super esoteric to me. So
yeah.
I think that's probably why I summarized that way. But yeah, no, I think it's good, though. I mean, I like the fact that we got to some concrete pieces that we can latch on to. So definitely appreciate it. And I do promise that not every episode will be, hey, how do we talk Pete off the ledge?
Yeah. Oh, can I just throw in one more quick one?
Yeah.
This is probably the easiest. This is as easy as naming things in the room. So when you're laying in bed at night and you're like, oh my God, you know, and you're totally caught up in your story, I think just sitting there going, okay, well, and then starting to list, just keep going through the list of all the things you're thankful for. That's another one that you can't help but shift the energy, you know? And again, to me, like, gratitude is much more powerful than positivity.
No, I'm with you on that. I mean, I think that we should probably dive into that on a different episode, and how that frames into fear, because I think it definitely has a big impact. And but I'm totally with you. Gratitude and grace are much more in my sphere of what I'm trying to be. If we go back to kind of that, like, those are, I'd rather have a lot more gratitude and give a lot more grace.
Yeah. And I just want to say to the people listening, don't trust me, right? Like, none of you even know me. But definitely trust your experience over anything that I would have to say. And so, you know, and I tell all my clients that too, you know, it's always important to trust your own experience over anything that anyone on the internet tells you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think that's, if you're like a super positive person and it's working for you and you don't find issue with it, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like, that's like, go with it. These are more tips, tools, techniques for people who are struggling. And and I will say, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, in 2020, there's more people than ever that are finding life to be just unbearable at times. So that's who we're talking to. And we didn't mean for this, you know, originally when I did this concept a year ago, pandemic wasn't, this was a, holy shit, Pete's having a midlife crisis, nervous breakdown, like driving to Alabama and what do I do and how do I make an impact? How do I change my life and what else can I do? Right. And that kind of evolved into this project where 350 plus people are in a group that feels safe. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's huge. And that, and the podcast is the extension of that, right? And it's just because I happen to like podcasting. That's why it even exists, right? And then inviting somebody in and you raising your hand was awesome, right? Because it gives a different perspective. We're definitely different people, but have enough similarities that it, and bound, me talking for an hour is not entertaining. Two people? Vastly more. So, you know, hopefully it finds a home, you know, somewhere to help you, or you hear it and you go, oh, my friend is struggling. Hey, listen to this. You know, so, I mean, it's all about connection. So,
yeah.
Awesome. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up. We want to thank our Patreon supporters. You make the group and show possible. Team E for E Wellness. You are our executive producer and we really, really appreciate everything you're doing for us. We also want to thank the Money, Motivation, and Motherhood podcast, along with our companion podcast, The Fat Man Chronicles and That Wine Pod. Also, I do have another podcast out there that's still there called Be Better Today, which is the hashtag that I first came up with many years ago when I started Fat Man Chronicles. But that podcast is just, it's like a minute and it just gives a quote and kind of my take on it. But it's if you haven't listened to them, there's a lot of episodes out there, a few hundred, I think. So, you know, feel free to check that one out too. No matter what you do, be sure to subscribe to the No Fear Project on your favorite podcast app and leave a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. It really does help people find this show. Finally, remember, the way forward is together, and the time to conquer is now.
Thank you for listening to the No Fear Project. Original music is from Josh and Dean. Join us on social media by searching the No Fear Project on Facebook and Instagram. Check out thenofearproject.com for more information, including in-person presentations on fear customized for your organization. The No Fear Project is committed to helping those with mental illness get help and to defeating the stigma. If you have any thoughts of harming yourself or suicide, please contact the Suicide Prevention Hotline for help now at 800-273-8255. Remember, you are not alone. The No Fear Project is a production of Paragon Media, all rights reserved.